check, 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 check. Check, 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 check.
Mark, hey, it's Sam Cedar calling. We got a show, buddy. Hello? Hello? All right, folks, we're waiting for Mark Maron, who should hopefully be here shortly. C.T. Benjamin says, Happy New Year, Sam. Wake that reprobate Maron up. Don't know where he is yet. Atlas, is that you? If it is, send me an email, and I'll forward it to him again. Do I really look that like I just woke up? I guess I do. Lunarelle, I appreciate the offer. Let's wait for Mark a little bit longer. Hopefully we'll see him shortly. Yeah, actually, you can get on the email list by just signing up at the blog. You can do it right at the blog at samcedarshow.com. I hope not too much bubbly for Mark. He doesn't drink anymore. Yes, I didn't want to, C.T. Benjamin, I didn't want to make people feel self-conscious about the way they looked on New Year's Day. Oh, I wonder if Mark somehow got screwed up on the way back from Vegas. Well, I haven't gotten any message from him. We can begin a little bit shortly. Hello? Thank you, Melina. Folks, I don't know where Maron is. So we may just have to start. I guess we'll have to have Cedar we may just have to start without Mark. We'll give it 2 more minutes, and then we'll start. Yeah, I noticed I look a little pixelated today, too. I don't know what that is. Is that better? Is that better? Yeah, it's sixth son of Romney's. All right, well, let's, I guess we'll start this and hope for Maron to show up.
Rolling on sugar on a cloud.
Ladies and gentlemen, Happy New Year, 2008. We're still waiting for Marc Maron. I don't know where he is. I have no reason to believe there's anything wrong. Other than he... Well, gosh, who knows? Hopefully Maron will show up during the course of the show today. It's going to mean I'm going to look for a lot more questions from you. You can IM me at Sam Cedar Show, and hopefully Maron will be here shortly. It is 2008. We are 2 days away from the Iowa caucuses. We will talk about that. I'm going to talk about my struggle in terms of an endorsement. I don't think I'm, you know, I mean, it's no surprise that to most of you that I am basically been tossing and turning between Obama and Edwards probably for some time now, maybe months, maybe a year. I have no idea. And we will talk about that. There's been a couple of endorsements over the past couple of weeks that I think really speak to what I am now referring to as my Obama dilemma. But we will get to that. I will take some of your IM questions in just a moment. There are two things, it's actually one story that caught my eye that I think is really stunning. One is from, this one is via Josh Marshall at Talking Points Memo, and it is from McClatchy. I'll just read the part that Josh highlights. I don't have, you know, much to add to this, but it is, it is disturbing. The day she was assassinated last Thursday, Benazir Bhutto had planned to reveal new evidence alleging the involvement of Pakistan's intelligence agencies in the rigging of the country's upcoming elections, an aide said on Monday. Bhutto had been due to meet U.S. Senator Arlen Specter and Representative Patrick Kennedy to hand over a report charging that the military inter-service intelligence agency was planning to fix the polls in favor of President Pervez Musharraf. Safarz Khan Lashari, a member of the Pakistani People's Party, that is was Bhutto's former party, election monitoring unit said the report was, quote, very sensitive and the party wanted to initially share it with trusted American politicians rather than the Bush administration, which is King Musharraf. This is stunning stuff. I mean, I've been reading online places where it's been suggested that Bhutto was sort of the U.S. favored, to be prime minister. It was a function of how many votes her party would get in this parliamentary election. But everything that I had read that suggested that this was the choice of Condi Rice. And most of you, I'm sure, are aware that we have chronicled over the years the split in the administration between Condi Rice at the State Department and Dick Cheney and the Office of Vice President. And so if Bhutto felt that she could not share this information with the Bush administration, but first wanted to go to bipartisan lawmakers, Specter and Kennedy, Patrick Kennedy in the House, not Ted Kennedy. Although one would assume that Patrick Kennedy would have shared this information with Ted Kennedy. Maybe that's prejudicial on my part, but that's neither here nor there. If that's the case, this is rather troubling information. But I'm sure. I mean, this is something that the mainstream media can get their hooks into. Let's go to some questions first from our IMers before we start talking a little bit about the caucuses. I will just a little bit of house cleaning. Oh, Shermie01, Happy New Year, Sam. I don't know if this means anything. Mark has been on his MySpace today, unless he has someone who updates it for him. I don't know why Mark wouldn't call me if he was having trouble getting on to the thing. I can't help but think that he's sleeping. Let's try and call him one more time, shall we? What did it say on his MySpace page? It wasn't anything that was sort of... I don't know if you guys... We're calling Mark Maron right now. I've got him on speakerphone. See if... What's going on?
Yeah, hello.
Hey, Mark. Yeah. You're on speakerphone. We're doing a show today.
Yeah, I know. I just got up, and I don't know how to fucking log in. I don't know what the password is anymore. I wish you would have called me earlier or reminded me or something.
All right, hold on.
I haven't even made fucking coffee yet, you know. This is not a good day for me to have a show, apparently, but I fucked up. What do you want?
Let me, I'm emailing you the login information right now.
All right, bye.
So there you have Mark Maron will be joining us shortly. That, I'll tell you, that we couldn't even plan that. That was too good. So why don't I take some questions? In the meantime, you can IM us at samcedarshow.com. And just to fill you in a little house cleaning on what I'm going to be doing in the next couple of days, there's a chance I'm going to fill in for Randy over, on Thursday and Friday. And on Thursday night, I'm going to be part of Jenk from the Young Turks is going to be doing some live coverage. I'm going to be a part of that via video, hopefully. I'm going to be doing some... calling into the Air America coverage, which I guess is going to feature David Bender and Rachel Maddow, to the extent she's, I think, going to be working from MSNBC, because she's going to be on MSNBC that night, and Mark Green will be on. And so I will be here on the SammyCam the entire evening with, looks like my buddy Josh Orton will be up here. And we'll be checking in via the SammyCam and via the phone to other sort of left-wing luminaries, hopefully. Now, Shermie, what time is Maron on his MySpace page today? Audio is a little distorted. Are people finding that? I'll turn that down. How's that? Is that sounding better? Nader endorses Edwards. Does that help or hurt your dilemma about Edwards and Obama? No, it doesn't affect me at all. Let's go right down the list here. Audio is fine, says Fernando. Doesn't remember his password. Motown Girl in California. Audio is okay now. It was cutting out a little bit earlier. Yeah, for some reason it doesn't look like my upload speeds are that great. Also, know that... I'm going to be doing stuff, I think if in that email I talked about stuff I'm going to be doing. Audio has a hiss. Well, sorry about that. Here we go, ladies and gentlemen. All right. Welcome, Mark Maron. yeah, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I haven't had coffee. I'm not happy about this.
I don't know what to tell you, buddy. It's Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
It's 10 o'clock your time.
It's 10 o'clock your time.
Dude, it was New Year's.
You know what
Year's.
I did for New Year's? I went to bed at about.
You know what I did for New Year's?
I don't care what.
12:02, and then woke up at 5 because Mila couldn't. She had some type of poopy problems.
I completely forgot we were doing it, you know. I'm trying to have a good disposition. I wanted to enter this new year with some exciting things to say and stuff. But, you know, I'm just right now I'm aggravated. I haven't had coffee yet. I didn't know we were doing this today for some reason. I don't even know if it was on my calendar. We do it at different times, different days, and I remember now you telling me we're doing it. Oh, here, it's right on my calendar. Cedar versus Marin, 10 a.m. You know what the problem with that is? I don't look at that calendar. Very rarely. I should probably look at it right now to see what else I'm talking about.
Well, are you calling this Marin versus Cedar anyways? Well, I thought we were calling it Marin versus Cedar.
Whatever you want to call it, Sam.
Except
for you. 10 p.m. Yeah. Sorry, I was looking at my calendar.
All right.
I need some fucking coffee. This is ridiculous.
Do you want to get some coffee?
Coffee?
I do.
All right, folks, so there you have it. Marin's going to get some coffee. I will continue to ask, answer some questions. Let's see. Joe Pavlo. There's a nifty little web app that you fill in your position on a variety, and it tells you which candidate is closest to you. Hey, Joe, would you mind emailing that to samcedarshow@gmail.com? All right. Yeah, we're gonna offer this as an audio podcast too. My audio is echoing now. I was hearing that too. I have a feeling that Mark has his speaker on his computer. Let's see, Banner Girl. Banner Girl is saying that Marin should cheer up. At least he has sunshine rather not snow. And we got about 6 to 8 inches of snow already this morning. The Turk Zone. It seems pretty clear that Marin will never be accused of being a techno geek. Yes, that's right. About actual proposals. All I've ever heard of a bunch of touchy-feely, warm and fuzzy crap about hope sounds to me like nothing more than playing to people's emotions without any substance at all. Well, Turkzone, I think he has offered obviously specific plans, but I think the general gist of what you're saying, I think there's some truth to it. We'll get into that when I talk about my Obama dilemma. Fred Thompson's speech on, this is from Art Guy Online on CNN. Thompson was rambling and incoherent, talking to himself. Don't know how anybody can get excited about this guy. He seems to be completely out of the picture. Gulfstream 2, do you see the deal with Letterman as a threat to the writers' union? What do you think of the deal? I actually don't see it as a threat to the writers' union. I don't know why I'm getting that echo. I think that'll probably help. I don't see the deal with Letterman as a threat to the Writers Guild because he has accepted all their proposals, and he's going out of pocket to pay them because he doesn't control how CBS uses these clips from his show online. He's going out of pocket to pay them what they would want to do this online. Hey, Mark, will you turn off your speaker? Feedback.
All right.
Great. Somebody was just asking me about the Letterman deal for the writer's strike. What do you think about that?
In terms of what? What's he doing? He's paying out of pocket?
He owns his show, Worldwide Pants, is the production company for his and that other show afterwards. I don't know who that guy is, that British guy. And he is going to, he's basically meet
Ferguson. Fred Ferguson?
He is meeting all the terms of the guild. And he's going out of pocket to pay for the internet usage that CBS uses of that show. I think it's a good thing because what it's going to do is it's going to destroy Leno's ratings if this goes on for an extended period of time, because it gives actors who need to push their films for the movie studios an outlet where they can go to do this on Letterman without feeling like they're crossing a picket line. And I think that Leno will have a tough time finding guests that aren't scabs. Well, by definition, but...
You know, to tell you the truth, is it really a problem, though, if, I mean, if guests are they really being scabs? I mean, I like what Letterman's doing. I think it's a great idea, but I'm sort of disappointed in the process of, it would have been interesting for me to see how these guys functioned without writers. I prefer to move more towards the real at this point in my life, and just the fact that Leno is buffering, you know, he's going to go back on the air, too, for come on and do 3 minutes. To prepare 3 minutes to perform for the middle of his monologue in case it's not going well, in lieu of having writers. That's fucking pathetic. And the thing about, yeah, I think Letterman, it's great. I why not go to work? And if he's going to do what if he's going to meet the terms, I mean, the guy's he's a professional. I don't care whether he beats Leno or not, but I just, the thing that's interesting to me is how frightened they are to just do what we're doing right now. So what, you got to get up and get coffee in the middle of your show. So big deal, you're a person. Human beings do that. So you talk from you shoot from the waist. How about a little of that for 15 minutes? What, are you afraid? That's what I don't understand. It's like, look, I want the writers to get what they want. I'm glad that David's going to accommodate them, and I have no problem with that. But I would have rather have seen them gone to work without writers. That would have been interesting television.
Well, Colbert and Stewart are doing that.
Colbert had one guy writing for him for the first 3 or 4 months, you know.
He doesn't have writers.
Right. But, I mean, he only had one or two writers to begin with. But, John, I mean, I can't imagine that he's honestly doing it completely without writers. When did they go back?
I think tomorrow night.
See, that'll be interesting. I mean, I'd rather watch David Letterman do it than John Stewart do it, to be honest with you. But, you know.
All right, well, there you have it. Maron looks great. Afraid he'll say something pertinent.
What do you mean?
He's complimenting you.
I'm in my pajamas. I woke up to my red light beeping. I'm in my pajamas. These are my pajamas. I went to bed fairly late.
What did you do?
Because it was... I went out with my friends. I did 2 shows at the Comedy Store, and then we went out and had some coffee. And then we came home, and I watched the beginning of Inside Man, because I taped it, and I've seen the middle of it 20 times. You know, I'm so, like, with the writer's strike, it's like, I really want them to get what they want. And I talked to a guy, I talked to my buddy Dan the other day, Dan Mintz, who's a writer. He wrote on Louis' show. And it's hard to speculate what's going to go down. He doesn't seem to think that they're going to be able to break the union. You know, and it just becomes a concern that, like, I know guys, my buddy Al's got, he's got 8 in the can of a pilot of a show that he shot, and they're going to run those things. They're going to start running them at the beginning of February, and if the strike keeps going on, what happens? If this strike goes on until June and they run 8 of Al's shows, you know, in February and March, I mean, what happens then? There's going to be a 2-month layover in between episodes? Are people going to remember or give a shit? I think that guys like Letterman and guys like Leno, the guys who do the talk shows, they've got to go on TV and address this and make it pertinent and real to real people. And I'd like to see them do it in a real way. I'd love to see people be honest and real. And I don't give a shit about Leno one way or the other. Yeah, I'm curious to see what Dave does.
All right, well, I'm hearing that Leno and Letterman return on the 2nd. That would be tomorrow. Stewart and Colbert return on the 7th. That would be on Monday, I guess. So I guess we'll see. I mean, it'll be interesting. You know, there's some people who are slamming Colbert and Stewart for going on, expecting them to be more union friendly. It's a tough dilemma, you know.
Union friendly? They work for Comedy Central. Comedy Central used to be the worst fucking people in the world with this stuff. They wouldn't pay anybody writers. I mean, it's amazing those guys even got union contracts. Basic Cable is a scab operation. Writers, comics, performers have been selling their soul to Basic Cable for years. So unless those people who are criticizing John and Steven for being union busting have never worked for Comedy Central or Viacom for short money and no coverage, then they got no right to say anything.
All right, there you have that.
People, you know, it's like people become so hypocritical all of a sudden. Everybody in this business, you know, if you wanted to do Basic Cable, you had to be a scab. There was no way around it, whether you were a writer or not. You know, that was the way it was. And people still did it. Nobody, you know, 15 years ago, 20 years ago, when Cable started doing that, nobody had this fight then over this, you know what I mean, demanding that we get union protection until, you know, certain policers like John. I mean, the fact that they have union shops at Viacom, that should be commended. That should be commended in and of itself.
Well, the unions didn't push jurisdiction in those things because, you know, for the first 10 years, cable was struggling and their margins are much lower than the networks. And the economics of the whole thing was very different. So
the same as what's like it is now with the Internet on some level.
Yeah, arguably. I mean, but it's hard.
I had to fucking work as a scab because I had no choice. I had no choice. You think it was good doing evening improv for like a buffet?
But you weren't a scab.
Yes, I was in a way.
No,
if I was part, we had no union protection as AFTRA members either.
I'm not denying that. But the definition of a scab is someone who crosses a picket line there was no union jurisdiction there, and the union had made that decision as well.
No union protection either. I mean, to be on AFTRA and to do like Dr. Katz or any of those comedy shows, the shows we used to do when we were younger, they had rights to it. They own it outright to the point where Evening at the Improv used to sell your fucking material to radio shows, sell it to records. Nick DiPaolo won a lawsuit on that.
He did.
There was a group of guys that went after Bud and the organization for selling the stuff for recording, and I think they won.
Good for Nick. I'm sure that he would also not acknowledge the. You know, I'm sure that meanwhile he's also bitching about trial lawyers and all the litigation in this country. But good for him.
You know, I think that. You know, when I talked to Dan, I mean, the scary part of this strike is that I asked him, I said, look, you make your living, you know, as a writer. Do you feel like you're well represented by the leadership of the WGA? Do you think that, you know, I don't even know who that guy is or who's speaking on behalf of everybody. But there's a couple of things that are going to happen. I mean, eventually, I guess this thing that they want to avoid and the thing that they're banking on is that if they keep this strike going on indefinitely, and they start to break the unions, and you get kids coming out of college who are willing to do this, who are willing to cross picket lines, thinking there won't be reprisals and gambling with their careers like that. I mean, then it's going to get really weird and ugly. It's already weird and ugly. I want them to get the terms that they want, but it's just scary. I guess I'm going to start picketing. I'm a little late to the table. I just spilled on myself. So what are we talking about? What else is going on? It's New Year's. Let me just tell you, I feel better. I feel like a burden has been lifted. I'm completely optimistic for the new year. I'm ready to get healthy again. I've had a cold for 3 weeks. I'm over my wife. That's done. I put that to rest. Pay attention, Sam. How many people are IMing you, really? You know, and
it's just my wife asking me to pick up some milk on the way home.
Oh, see, that's something I don't have to worry about. Wife, babies. I'll never have to worry about that.
I've started this New Year's like I have every New Year's since Myla has been alive, which is with a cold. I am only moderately sick relative to the past 2 years on New Year's Day. But one of the things I had mentioned at the top of the show, yeah.
I think I'm voting for John Edwards in the primary.
I mean, that's the way I started the show, was like talking about my Edwards-Obama dilemma. And I don't know, but let's talk it through it. Why are you voting for Edwards?
I didn't like him at first. You know, I mean, it wasn't even a matter of not liking him. But something happened. Something just clicked in my head. I think he's being, you know, I actually think he's going to do some of the things he says in terms of trying to close this gap between rich and poor. I don't know the specifics of detail, but he seems committed and convicted, and he wants to make a difference in the world in a very specific way, and he's the only guy that really addresses this class issue in detail and addresses some of this stuff around, you know, health insurance and stuff. But the class issue, that's the only issue. That's really going to become the only issue. And bringing light to that, to me, is important, and I think it takes a certain amount of balls to do that at all. Hillary Clinton, I you know, whatever. And Obama, yeah, he seems very intense and very focused, and it'd be very exciting to have a black president. But I still don't feel like he's saying fucking anything. And I think that Edwards has been fairly specific about addressing economic issues before anybody else was, and that's really the fucking problem. And I started to believe that maybe he doesn't dye his hair, and I can be okay with a guy that's that pretty. I can. And I know those are Republican frames, but, you know, I just didn't see that he had the physical gravitas to be president, and it was before the Republicans put anything in my head. But I've begun to believe that he's an earnest guy, and that he's also on the other side of that a player. I mean, remember he went to the G8 a couple years ago. You don't get invited there and go there to, you know, that is a passing of the wand process. You know, the guy has been indoctrinated by the G8. He is, you know, he's going to be a global player on a business level. We're going to have to accept that. But I do think he's earnestly wants to help Americans make a better way for themselves. How vague is that in working people-ish?
Well, I mean, I can't really disagree with anything you're saying. In fact, a year ago, I think I was much more firmly in the Edwards camp. I mean, I had interviewed him a lot over the past couple of years. He was always there when the SIUU was fighting some battle. He was there working on poor, you know, poverty issues. And frankly, you know, during that time span, I wasn't terribly happy with what Obama was doing in the Senate. And, you know, I'm taking the sort of the I'm affording myself the luxury of not having to vote until the February whatever the New York primary is, and I think it's going to be a lot clearer which one of those two has a chance after New Hampshire. So with that,
it's even starting to feel to me like, you know, if Hillary keeps picking up, if she picks up steam, that it's one of those things. Like, what we'll find out in the next few months is if, you know, the big fix by the big they is really in. We're going to find that out in the next couple months.
Yes. You know, Ted Rall came on the Majority Report. This must have been over a year and a half ago. And he said that he believed that McCain and Clinton were going to win. Were going to be the nominees because they had the most money, and there had never been a time where somebody had that much money that far out and had won. So it'll be interesting to see if that comes around. But all right, that aside, I'm not going to discuss Hillary Clinton because I'm not interested. Well, there's a couple of reasons why I'm in her candidacy, at least in terms of the Democratic primary. And whether it ranges from, I do think it's problematic to have this type of dynasty where you have, you know, whatever it is, 24 years if she wins a second term, 24 years of no president whose name wasn't Bush or Clinton. I know that's, I just think that's fundamentally problematic in terms of this country. But that aside, I also feel that her advisors and, maybe it's unfair to associate her too much with Bill Clinton, but she's using it as much as anybody, if it makes sense. And I thought his presidency was very problematic from a progressive standpoint, and even frankly from a Democratic Party standpoint. I mean, she distanced herself from the DLC about a year ago, around this time. And a lot of that was because she was conscious that there was a real problem with the DLC, particularly as to how the activists' base, you know, perceived it. But I'm not convinced that she's not associated with those people significantly. All right. So between Obama and Edwards, and I agree with everything you said about Edwards. It really comes down to
there seems to be something. But look, before you do him, it just seems to me that, look, you know, if the ideas that he's saying, you know, I don't know, I haven't talked to David Sirota lately. Have you?
Not lately, no. But Sirota is a big
Now, it just seems to me. Right. And I think that he would probably take, you know, that Edwards would probably use Sirota as an advisor if he was smart. But if he's willing to do that, if he's been sanctioned by the G8, if he is, you know, made some sort of, you know, backroom compromise to somehow do it in a way, to somehow ease corporate money, you know, out of government and take some action towards that, and also take some action to re-representing the disenfranchised in this country, which is most people, and he means it, and if that were the only thing that he was running on, that I'm going to try to limit this corporate involvement in lobbying and in government and in owning congressmen and senators. And I'm going to try to once again represent the rights and desires and of working people once he figures out who they are. Sam, I don't know where the fuck people are making money. From what was like a $500 billion spent on Christmas presents, are people fucking morons? I mean, $500 billion that, you know, and we're about to enter economic disaster. Where the hell are people making money? All this money is on paper. The jig is up. Whoever's going to be in that seat, you know, come 2004 is going to be sitting on a recession that's going to look like a depression. They're going to be sitting on a war that is still, that thing's going to, you know, explode back up again. I don't care. And I'm not being pessimistic. This is the new year. This is Happy New Year. And I think that if Edwards can handle this stuff and approach it honestly, then he's my guy. But I don't even hear these other people talking about anything.
All right, well,
Ron Paul on TV. That guy's a fucking...
Actually, I had a little piece about Ron Paul getting excluded from the Fox debate in New Hampshire, which is ridiculous. But that aside, all right, everything we're talking about at this point, though, is rhetoric. And I want to get to that part about it in a second, but Anonymous Liberal. Have you ever been to that blog? Anonymous Liberal, I think it's maybe a dot blog spot.
Damn, I couldn't even get up for our show.
On December 19th, he came out with his endorsement of Obama, and I think it really sort of captures sort of why I even consider Obama, although there's a much longer list of reasons why I wouldn't support Obama than Edwards, okay? But I think that on the other side of the ledger, there's more reasons why I would support Obama than Edwards. So does that make sense? In other words, I'm much more sort of like dynamically ambivalent about Obama than I am Edwards. But I think the scales... I don't know. But let me read some of what he's talking
about. All right, go ahead.
He starts off with the premise that on most issues within the Democratic Party, there is a decent amount of consensus, which I think is true. I mean, certainly, there's not a lot of... Put aside rhetoric for a moment. If you look at the sort of policy or plans that each person has put out, there's not a huge amount of daylight between these things. And particularly, you know, healthcare... I think Edwards came out with the plan first. No, he did come out with the plan first. And that very well may have influenced Hillary Clinton and may have influenced Obama. Edwards probably has the best health care plan on paper. He and Hillary provide for mandates. And the whole notion behind that is that you need to force everyone to participate in, and this is just an insurance program, part of it is private, part of it's public. You can choose yourself which one you want to be involved in. But you need everybody to participate because the way insurance works is that you need to diffuse the risk. And you need to have people who, you know, particularly young people, pay into the plan so that it's there for them when they need it or in the instance that they do need it. 80% of healthcare dollars are spent on 20% of the people, but nobody knows if you're going to be part of that 20%. So by everybody being forced to pay into a plan, it diffuses the risk and makes the plan that much more solid. Now, Obama has not provided for mandates. He hasn't called for mandates. Now, on Meet the Press this weekend, he sort of hedged on that, but he didn't use the word mandates. And I think, you know, that aside, there's not a lot of difference in the plans. So he says, anonymous liberal says, the two most important questions are, A, who can get elected, and B, who would be able to run a competent, successful administration. Successful is where it gets a little amorphous, like what is the agenda supposed to be? But let's take it from...
But also successful in the fact that they're going to be holding a huge bag of shit economically and with the war. And that they're not going to be able to make any movement with the military leaders that's going to... It's just, to me, this administration, you know, if they can get out of it as a Democrat and still have the Democratic Party viable by the end of it. I mean, someone can do a great job here if they really put their heart on the line.
Well, all right. So the challenges are the same for all of them. And let's just say successful from the perspective of a progressive, which means, you know, we want the tax burden to be more progressive, you know, the tax responsibility in society more progressive. In other words, the ultra wealthy should be paying a larger percentage of the tax. We want to maintain American jobs and grow these industries. Basically, we also want to go to a more green economy because I think we both agree that if there's going to be any economic development in this country, that's where it's going to come from. And we want a foreign policy that is not as unilateral, not as belligerent, and one which, you know, is more based on soft power. So, okay, he runs through a couple of the reasons why he thinks Obama has a better chance of getting elected in a national election. I happen to think that all three can get elected, okay? But I think the issue for me with Obama is that Obama, I think, his plan, he does not want to win. And I think to the point where he's willing to even sacrifice his viability on some level. You know, I think he's been running this primary with an eye to the general election and has been willing to lose support from the Democratic base with an agenda of winning by a much bigger margin than he otherwise would in the general election. And one thing that Anonymous Liberal cites is the fact that he's got a tremendous amount of charisma and communication skills, and he's convinced that's how Bill Clinton won. That had nothing to do with his centrist policies. It had to do with that. And so he says, with that in mind, which candidate would you think would give the most riveting and persuasive convention speech? Who do you think would do a better job selling the Democratic platform in a debate with Mitt Romney or Rudy Giuliani? Who do you think at the end of the day has a better chance of convincing character voters to like and to trust him or her? Now, I just got back from Michigan. To a person, it didn't make a difference. Democrat, Republican, ultra-religious, because there were some of those in the family gatherings, secular, liberal, not liberal. Every single person said to me the same thing. I'd say, who are you thinking about voting? They would ask me. I would ask them first. They all said they can't vote for Hillary Clinton. Okay? Right or wrongly, I'm just reporting it. It's all anecdotal.
Let me tell you something. Don't underestimate the potential of somebody who has nothing to lose. John Edwards has nothing to lose.
All right, wait a second. Wait. I want to make my case first before we get into this. Because I don't know. I mean, let me make my case first, okay? These people all say, you know, I mean, these people, they still think that she killed Vince Foster, okay? I mean, that's how sort of deranged these people are. But
they're relatively enlightened. They're relatively enlightened if they even know who Vince Foster is.
Well, yes, but only based on what Rush Limbaugh has told them. But all of these same people, regardless of who they were, said, I could vote for Obama. And I think part of that is his charisma. I think part of it is he uses a lot of religious vernacular that we don't necessarily pick up on unless you really have read a bunch of his speeches, and he uses a lot of vernacular that is not overtly religious, but it's part of that vernacular. And another point that
But he's also an opportunity. He's also an opportunity to assuage, literally 200 years of white man's guilt. And even conservative a person, if a conservative person is not racist and they're given a choice, this would be. It's almost like it's almost a Jesus opportunity for them.
I totally agree with that. People say, I don't think a black man can win. I think, on the contrary, I think that, in fact, he will get more votes than he would have had he been a white man, because I think that's exactly it. I think there's a lot of people out there who are not quite sure, and they have run in circles, they've been a Republican, let's say, who are still self-conscious about, are they a racist? And I think their voting for Obama is their way to affirm to themselves that I am not racist. I actually think they work very much in his favor in that regard. And another point that Anonymous...
And also, you got to realize, when it comes down to the wire, that the black leadership, Oprah aside, that, given in black communities, whether there's a debate going on in black communities, whether Obama is really black, whether he's Tomming, whether he represents their interest. I think when it comes down to the wire, if he's the guy, they're going to come out and vote for him. I mean, come on. If they can get them out to vote, the black community is going to vote for
him. I agree totally.
I mean, they're not going to vote for her.
I agree with you. And another point that Anonymous Liberal makes here, that I guess he's quoting Big Tent Democrat, who was Armando on Daily Kos, and he's now at, I think, Talk Left. That Obama is a media darling. If you look at the statistical breakdown of what kind of press he's gotten and how much press he's gotten, he has gotten a lot of press. And it's been good press. And I think that's because there's that same mechanism working. There is a lot of excitement about his candidacy. And, Anonymous Liberal goes on to say, he says, if Hillary Clinton is the nominee, I suspect the dominant media narrative will be the dynastic element of the election. Bush, Clinton, Bush, Clinton. And I would agree. It's going to go back to, there is going to be a certain amount of rehashing of the Clinton administration, et cetera, et cetera. He writes, if Obama is the nominee, however, I suspect the dominant media narrative will be the historic nature of the election. I mean, anybody who runs against Obama in a general election is going to be the guy who is running in the election that could provide America with its first black president. And that's going to be the media, the dominant media
narrative.
Right.
Well, let me ask you a question. Slick. So I understand what you've made a great case.
I'm not done with the case yet.
Yeah, I just want to interject here because I started to drift. Now, who is going to be? Look, I can only take so much with no commercials. Who's going to be?
I understand.
Usually, you got there. We'll be right back. I'm going to finish this. I hear what you're saying, and I understand this part of the case as reasonable, and I am excited for Obama. I think I am still craving on some level when I watched him on Meet the Press or whatever he was on the other day, and when I see him, there's a lot of things I like about the guy. His ability to be grounded and focused and have a very weird simmering charisma I enjoy. But I still don't find, even given what you're saying, that what you're calling rhetoric, I want to see somebody, I don't expect her from Clinton, but on some level I feel that Edwards, when he is pushed to the wire at some point, he has had moments of it, where I don't think he has anything to lose. I don't know that, that he looks at his future as like, I think he's one of these guys, it's like, this is what I want. I could be done with politics tomorrow. I really could. That when you've got a guy like that, that we might see an explosive moment of honesty. And I don't know. I know that Obama's not going to do that. I know that he's going to keep building and keep, maneuvering things. But is there a chance for an Obama-Edwards ticket? I mean, if this is the case, I'm just hoping that Edwards just says, look, you fucks, here's what's going on. You guys are all fucking stupid, and you've got to wake up to the realities economically in this country and stop distracting yourself with bullshit, and we've got to start working together. I mean, the rich aren't the enemy, but they're close, and I know that I'm one of them, but we've got to figure out how to re-level the playing field and create some sort of manufacturing base in this country so we can build morale back up. We've got to be creative here. And in terms of international policy, I mean, that's going to be a compromise for anybody. I mean, whatever kind of new foreign policy anyone's going to have, just to be nice is just the beginning. There's still going to be compromises to make. I mean, when Bhutto got assassinated, you know, that Musharraf is a loose, he's out of control, and he's Bush's guy. I mean, are you going to deal with that region and those areas? Are the only, how are you going to approach that? There's always going to be compromises. Right. They're always going to blow up in whoever president's face.
All right, hold on. Now, let me continue here. I want to take the rhetoric thing, because this is where I have, on my side of the ledger, where I have problems with Obama, this is where I have these problems. He uses right-wing frames. He did it with the Social Security debate. He just the other day implied, you know, he sort of called John Edwards a trial lawyer disparagingly, which I think is just absolute bullshit. And he doesn't provide the type of rhetoric you're talking about. When the Democrats took control in 06, Atrios wrote multiple times, and I think this was absolutely accurate, that we have to shift from, you know, a party that begins to use legislative maneuvers and change our rhetoric in some way. And I think that is, I mean, I think that's the issue with Obama and everybody else. I mean, I think Obama's, in his heart, he is as liberal, if not more liberal, and more progressive than Edwards or Clinton. I genuinely believe this, and maybe I'm making this up out of whole cloth. But you know, I had a friend from high school who used to work with him as an activist in Chicago, and I think that's what's going on here. And this is where anonymous liberal comes in. And he talks about this battle that Obama's had with Krugman about that very thing, and that this notion of, you know, Obama sort of says we can sit down and talk, hash these things out. Anonymous liberal says, I think this is reading way too much into differences in rhetoric. I don't think that Obama harbors any illusions that these powerful interest groups will just roll over and make concessions. He knows that at some point in the process, genuine confrontation will be necessary. But I think Obama realizes something that Krugman refuses to acknowledge, that real pressure is generated not by words, but by electoral success and ability to command public opinion. Obama wants to go in as president with a 60% majority and bully people and have conservatives or Republicans sign on to his programs without realizing they're signing on to something that is supposedly liberal. He just wants them to trust him with these issues, and I think his rhetoric is the way that he does that. And I don't think in the final analysis it ultimately matters what the rhetoric is.
Okay,
Because, listen, the argument for rhetoric is that you are leading the country and the people to a certain point and to achieve a certain agenda. His rhetoric may actually be more effective than Edwards' confrontational rhetoric. Now, this is predicated on the notion that I am maybe projecting my own hopes onto Obama, and I acknowledge that's the case. But look, if you look at their voting records, Edwards' voting record is not significantly, in fact, probably arguably not better than Obama's. Obama's, I think, has known for a long time that electoral politics are very hard coming as a legislator, and frankly, he's been... You could say he's been cowardly in some instances because he voted, you know, present a lot as a Illinois state senator, and he sort of avoided certain votes as a federal senator, but not ones that would have made a difference. And you know, I think he is a very calculating guy. I think he is, I've heard him say that when it came to gay marriage, that if he had the opportunity to advise Martin Luther King. What's more important battle to fight, voting rights or anti-miscegenation laws? He would say voting rights, and that I think he makes those type of calculations. And so I think the idea is, and Anonymous Liberal again sums it up, the real trick in politics is to be strong, assertive, and demanding while appearing reasonable, conciliatory, and open to compromise. I mean, that's always what seems to win in this country. You know, go in, disarm them, and then actually when it...
I mean, that's
where we get into, you know...
My
Obama dilemma.
Oh, okay. My issue is that as the months go by here, as we head towards the primary, is that, you know, really within a month, it just seems to me that given, you know, what we've gone through with Christmas, given where the economy is going, given that those news stories are not going to go away and that the realities of those things aren't going to go away, that there is going to be a type of economic desperation that is going to be unavoidable. And it is going to trump, you know, any other issue that some people may have, unless, you know, you're delusional and you're a Huckabee supporter and believe that being righteous and godish and prone towards a sort of delusional Christianity that you will be, you know, that salvation is around the corner. But I think that economic realities will dictate the type of honesty that is necessary from whoever is going to be the candidate. People, you can only bullshit people so long, rhetoric or no rhetoric. I understand that you're saying that rhetoric is a tool for someone to show their innate leadership qualities and make them viable to the largest number of people possible. Yeah, I get that.
And to marshal. And
I don't
marshal,
necessarily feel that from
and
Obama
to marshal
yet.
People. And to marshal people. I mean, look, you've seen the crowds that this
right.
guy draws. And so his rhetoric in some way is effective in that regard.
Okay. Well, there's a lot of hope. Now, yeah, is it the rhetoric or is it what we were talking about before? Is that he is a tremendous solution to a sort of, you know, whether or not... That whether or not whether or not people are hearing what they need to hear, or whether or not they're just hoping to hear what they need to hear, or whether or not they just want to be part of a historical undertaking, like you're saying, which is voting for the first black president and putting the first black president into office. I agree with you. You know, Edwards does not have the leadership qualities that Obama has. He does not have the uniqueness or the position in U.S. history that Obama has. He's short on a lot of things that Obama has naturally, all right? But I think that his courage in dealing with, you know, economic realities in very plain terms is important. Whether or not he's going to make it as a candidate, I do not think, if we're going to have the argument here, I do not think he will ever have the qualities or potential that Obama is sitting on right now. But I still believe Obama is sitting on them, and they have not been enacted to their fullest potential yet. And I don't know that they will, and I don't know how many, you know, how much of it is people hanging on to a hope that they will, or whether he's really going to pull it off. I would think that somebody like John Edwards would be a great companion to somebody like Obama if Obama steps up. Because I think that Edwards has a certain amount of fearlessness around addressing economic realities in a very plain way that somebody needs to do. Somebody needs to do it.
Yeah, I think if...
I don't hear it from Obama. I don't hear it from Hillary.
I think if Edwards had been allowed to express what he was expressing, the notion of two Americas in 2004, as Kerry's running mate, that he would... That they probably would have won. I mean, But I think at the end of the day, the question is, who is going to be more successful as a president? And again, we're saying successful in pushing through these policies, in getting towards universal health care, getting towards single payer, frankly. And who's going to be more effective? And I think it's going to be the guy who can garner more, better
right,
press,
right.
More popular support. And whatever reason, it's the combination of his rhetoric and who he is. I don't think, as a white guy... That Obama could get away with this type of rhetoric because he does bring this inherent excitement. Because, you know, fundamentally this country is about, I think at the end of the day, if single theme that has been consistent in this country, it has been, you know, that really gets to the core of the real dilemmas in this country, race is probably got to be it. I mean, there have been times where, you know, money issues have been ascendant and up and down, but race has been that one constant where, you know, you can actually measure progress, institutional progress. And I think this would be the culmination of something that has bedeviled America for a long time. And I think if he gets elected, he'll have the opportunity, I think, to make real change. Will he do it? I don't know. But you know what? We don't know really whether Edwards would really do it. We just don't know. We can't know this.
Would any of them ever do
exactly.
any of them?
But I do feel confident.
Would there any of them ever do anything that they say?
Obama will have the most opportunity to do that. And I think he will have the greatest amount of tools.
But the thing is about okay, all right, I buy it, and I believe you, and I'll think about it.
Well, I'm not trying to convince you. I'm really more talking about my
and the issue of how white people. I know. You're just talking to yourself, and you think I'm not here. But look, what I'm saying is that the issue of race and the issue of economics and how that pertains to race is something that is not specifically a racial issue. And I appreciate that Edward sees that. And I think that part of what you're saying is a plus for Obama in terms of where he stands in relation to potential in terms of dealing with racial issues because he's black is I don't know. We'll see. Because it seems that within the black community, you know, how this thing is handled and what defines somebody who is honestly honoring the black community as opposed to somebody who is tomming is going to be a very interesting thing to see how that unfolds in terms of Obama. Because Obama is very calculating in how it was almost like Obama was invented somehow in a political kitchen or chemistry lab. Yeah, to actually have an African father. Oh my God! I mean, you know, was this written in some book? Was this prophesized? I mean, it's a fairly interesting background that he honors in a very specific way that is very non-specific to the African American experience that we see in a general way, almost in a stereotypical way in this country.
Yeah, but he understands, I think, alienation on a fundamental human level,
and that
I think is. You know, the idea of having somebody, the chances of having somebody sit in the Oval Office who really understands that alienation, not as in I am different from other people because I'm a leader and they're followers, but alienation in the sense that I have been in various experiences in society where I realized that I was not relevant because of something that I had no control over.
Okay. Now
let's important attribute.
Well, let's stay on this, and I'm gonna actually do a little more research because in the new year, let's talk a little bit about resolutions, and then I've got to bake a cake. I got to go. I got to bake a cake. I got a party to go to.
I don't know what that means.
It means I got to bake a cake. I'm going to a party this afternoon, and I've got to bake. I've said I'm gonna bring a cake, and I made the icing yesterday, and I got to bake a cake. So in terms of resolutions that I'm making for the new year, Sam, I'm going to start to move out of my self-pity around my current marital predicament, and I'm going to reopen my eyes and get actively involved in the research I need to do to be well informed. I can't live in the shadow of my sadness right now, and it's a whole new year, Sam. It's all going to turn around. And what I'm telling you, as my co-host and as a guy who is your friend for the most part, though you don't call me outside of this show, but that whatever, you're busy. Is that we're going to get to the bottom of this, and we're going to make a difference in 08, Sam. That's all I'm saying.
I appreciate that. That's very special. I'm going to tell you what my resolution is. My resolution is to lose 8 pounds through the Pritikin system, through its use of nutritious bars, shakes, and ready-made
a lot of vinegar.
Pritikin at pritikin.com. It's the best way to lean yourself down the Pritikin way. The other thing is, too, is I'm going to do more...
Are you getting money for this that you're not telling me about?
My plan was to actually have, like, boxes of stuff, and I just totally... When you started talking resolutions, I totally remembered that was going to be my big joke for today. And, no, I'm not... But, you know, I've been contemplating, like, that's what I should try and do, is get on, like, one of these meal plans or something and get endorsed by it.
Dude, here's what you got to do. Stop eating bread and run 3 to 4 miles every other day, and you'll lose 8 pounds in a month.
All right, well, I'm going to try and exercise and stop eating bread, but I just thought that was a funny... I made a resolution last year at this time that was sort of annoying. I was coming off of that sort of miserable where Nikki and Milo were living upstate, and I was sort of crashing in the city, working because of the bankruptcy, and we left the city basically because it just became too expensive. And I certainly did not resolve to be doing this show with you. Under these circumstances. So I'm going to lay off any resolution short of I'm going to lose 8 pounds. This time next year, 8 pounds lighter. I wish there was something much more relevant than that. And also I'm going to add, I'm going to resolve to get sponsored.
So now,
I'm going to make money as I lose weight. I don't know how I'm going to do that yet, but if there's anybody out there from any type of food program.
Dude, why don't you just... Why don't you just figure out how to get the show sponsored? I'm a male anorexic, for fuck's sake. If you want to get someone with, if you want to get a diet to sponsor our show and pay us to lose weight, I'm so on board with that.
We could actually have on the Smash Channel
ready,
banner, like right up here. It would. Oh God, I'm not even going to dare to do that. I can't actually get out of this chair. We could put like right up here. Brought to you by. We should have sponsorships on this page. All right, let's answer some. Let's go to the. Yeah. Let's go to the IMs.
Oh.
Okay. Uh oh. People are having a problem with my video. Wow, Annette has lost 68 pounds on a diet plan. What you need is automatic transcription software, then Google AdSense tied into that. Oh, that's a good idea.
I got to make a phone call. What are we doing? When are we doing this show next?
I'm going to be up in New Hampshire next Tuesday. And so I don't know. We're going to have to play it by ear to see if I can get a connection that's going to actually function. Because I'm going to be up there for the New Hampshire primaries. And I'm going to be doing some videos for 236, actually.
Do you have a lot of IMs there? Because I can go make his phone call and come right back.
Considering that Obama and Clinton poll the worst against Republicans, Edwards polls the best. Wouldn't the best thing for the Democratic Party be for Obama and Clinton to drop out? Not only that, but it would piss off the right-wing corporate media. Polls that are that hypothetical, like where if somebody were win and to match up, I don't know how much you can put into that poll. BDMP ISDN box radio. What is that exactly? I don't know. It's some type of box that provides a wider data stream for audio to be communicated over the phone, but it doesn't sound like you're over the phone. Fernando, video is fine. Fernando says, Americans have learned to discount rhetoric. Politicians rarely govern how they campaign. I agree. And I think that, you know, that's really what it comes down to is like, look, you know, FDR was not all fiery rhetoric on the campaign trail. Maybe something changed. But Obama's going to be in a position to garner a lot of public support. And I think that's going to intimidate him. I mean, you imagine, I also think he would provide better coattails. for Democratic candidates. And, you know, we're going to have a larger majority in the House, so hopefully a larger majority in the Senate. And that would be... Did you go to Highland High, Mark? That you're holding up there?
Yeah.
All right, let's go through some...
That's my high school picture. My senior yearbook picture.
Let's see. Please do not overlook that Florida and Ohio, big electoral states, are both very racist. But I think you're going to find that a lot of black people are going to be able to vote in Ohio this time around.
That's when I was Frank Zappa.
Is that you? Jesus. V. Huber says the problem with Obama, he must talk to us. He may gain Republicans, but he may lose the Democrats. He's not going to lose the Democrats. Melina, I was joking about the predicament. That was just the one thing that I came up with.
You all froze up, Sam.
I'm froze up. Now? No? I must be. Am I froze up still? Am I still frozen
up? What happened?
Am I frozen up? I guess so. A couple more questions. Oh, Mark is calling me, I think. Hello?
I don't even know if I'm still on.
Oh, okay. All right, I'll talk to you later.
That
was my wife saying I had not frozen. You must be frozen, Mark. I can hear you. It's strange. I'm going to continue on here. Hold on, let me call Mark. Hi, I'm not frozen to everybody else. I'm just frozen to you. So why don't you just rejigger your thing and come back on? All right. Yeah, Rob, I know I was on. Mark is reloading. Can you hear? Can you see me?
Yeah,
Mark.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, the problem was on your local.
Quit blaming me for technical problems.
It was your fault, buddy. I don't know what to tell you.
What's going on, man?
all right. Well, let's answer a couple of IMs. If people, let's see. People want us. All right. People are going crazy here with IMs. All right. So. You say that Obama gets attention from the corporate media that Edwards don't. Why do you think that is? If they thought Obama was truly progressive, do you think he'd get any more attention than Edwards or Kucinich, like the Clintons, Obama's corporation-friendly candidate? That may be true. I think people are afraid of Edwards' rhetoric, but I think part of it is undeniably that Obama, there is just the feeling, you know, to the extent that, you know, people accuse the actual members of the media of being liberal, I think this is basically what it is, that they are liberal in the sense that they are not racist per se. They're definitely classist. They don't really realize it. But I think that's why, you know, to the extent that I've ever had problems with the word liberal, it's always been because it usually means socially liberal only.
But also,
and
Sam,
not economically progressive.
But also, Sam, it's a lot of it has to do with what you were talking about, which is that this is a great fucking story. And as the story picks up traction, and as it becomes more exciting, there's no way the corporate press, despite whoever they are, any press, is not going to jump on this thing. I mean, this is...
No way.
This has been in history. Are you kidding me? I mean, you know, whether it's
progressive or not progressive, whether it's corporate or not. I mean, Obama's great business as a fucking story, despite whatever he says or whatever his relationships are.
Yep. Yeah, my prediction has been if he wins out Iowa, what you're going to see is almost an unprecedented coronation of him by the press. They are so desperate to have this story. And why wouldn't you? Why wouldn't you? I mean, from their perspective, this is the perfect story for the mainstream media. They can do the. I mean, it's just a perfect story for them. They can feel good about themselves. They can. It's just the case. I don't think that it's necessarily because. And I do think there is something to the fact that his rhetoric does not scare the corporate press that much. But the real question is, what's he going to do when he gets in office? What's his agenda? And more importantly, how does his being in office empower progressives? I think it gives a lot of breathing space for progressives here. You know, I think he opens it up. I really do. I mean, I would love there to be, you know, sort of these, sort of like the progressives having to pull him supposedly to the left, because
you know,
I think if they are
dude,
able to pull him to the left, people come with him.
Experience. In my experience, just from being part of Air America, there's nothing better than opening opening the door to as many progressives as possible, because it always ends well and everything is so organized and wonderful when progressives all come from all different sides and get involved in one undertaking, because it always works out.
let's see.
There's nothing better than a room full of progressives from different camps trying to get something done, let me tell you.
Obama can win Iowa and New Hampshire just like in 92 when Clinton lost both those two races, but then he came back, he became the comeback kid and won everything after that. If you look at the state polls all over the country, Clinton might be close to Obama in Iowa and New Hampshire, but it's not close everywhere else. She's head by double digits. That's a proper analysis. The question is, will the dynamic change differently? I just don't think that there's going to be. Neffer says, "What about the racist side of the story in Iowa? We still know it exists in this country. Yes, but you know, when Harold Ford is able to lose by 1% in 10, not as important as a force as people think it's going to be." Let's see, Bob. Okay. Edwards has faced corporations in court. Gulf Street knows they will play dirty. We need someone with that mentality and power to take them down. Yes, but the bottom line is, Gulf Street, and I agree with you on this, the bottom line is that a president alone can't do it. And a president that wins 51% can't do it. And but with that said...
But also a president has to negotiate. That despite whatever legal expertise Edwards might have, there's still a legislature and there's still the idea of negotiation. So the idea is that there's going to be some sort of Manichaean black and white, this is over kind of idea. What you're saying or what you're about to say is probably true. There's a big time lapse right now. But it's all negotiation. It's all compromise. That's what these guys do. I mean, that's their job. There's been very few leaders, aside from the moron that we have now, who is not even doing on behest of his own, you know, ideology, that are so cut and dry and so stubborn. I mean, at some point, diplomacy and negotiations is going to be a slow process in terms
and
of facilitating
this,
some of the
Edwards,
ideas. That
Edwards knows there's got to be negotiation. I have no doubt of that. But the question is, does Obama know that these corporations are going to... Does he have the same perspective in terms of the corporations being this problematic? I think so. I admit, I think so.
Send him Robert
Reich's
book.
I don't know for a fact, but I do know the question is, will he have the ability, will he have more assets to bring to bear in this type of fight? And I think the answer is yes. But I think it's, you know, and here's the other thing. If Edwards becomes the nominee, I'm going to be just as happy. That's why I'm not really sort of endorsing Obama in this instance. I'm saying, either one of them, it's just I'm really more discussing sort of this dilemma. So I have no problem with Edwards' candidacy at all. My ideal ticket would be Edwards Obama or Obama's Obama Edwards Harold. That would be great. I don't think that's likely, but that would be great. D. Huber. Oh, okay. And all right, so, Mark, I guess we should start to wrap things up, huh? Well, there has been a little bit of delay.
Yeah, what do you want to know?
I picked up on
it. It's been a big delay today.
I'm not sure if that's my problem or on your end.
Can it be your problem once, you bastard?
All right, folks. Well, it took you a long time to register, I guess, because of the delay. So, Mark, happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you too, Sam. Sorry about the tardiness and the aggravation initially. I really spaced it out somehow. Here's what we say goodbye to in 2008.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us. And, folks, again, if you want to get a break on your subscription and you have not emailed me at samcedarshow@gmail.com, write Marin V. Cedar in the subject line, and you'll get a small
I thought we were done.
Break on the subscription once we started. That's samcedarshow@gmail.com. Thanks for joining us, folks. Have a great 2008. We'll see you soon.